Welcome to Cannabis Business Minds, where we bring together the brightest minds to help you build a better business. Cannabis Business Minds is presented by live-consulting.com and found on cannabisradio.com. Here are your hosts, Simone Samaluka-Radzins and Kristen Yoder. All right, so on today's show, we've got Terry Blevins, who's a former police officer that has led several incredible leadership roles, including the head of security for Beats by Dre. Terry currently is the CEO of an LA-based security services firm, a volunteer with LEAP, and currently working on a leadership book. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yes. I appreciate it.
Welcome to the show. I'm so excited to talk to you and hear about your evolution from being a police officer to a security company in the cannabis industry.
Thank you. I love talking about marijuana. So.
Yeah, I bet. And I saw that you were a police officer for the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department.
Yes.
I'm from Arizona.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't have a single friend that didn't get arrested for cannabis at least once growing up. And I know it's really interesting to watch Arizona change now, but are you still in touch with the police officers you worked with?
I actually am. I have a lot of friends who are still in law enforcement and retired from law enforcement in Arizona.
Yeah.
My parents and my son and his wife and child still live in Arizona.
Yeah.
So, and I visit often. So, and I stay in touch with a lot of my law enforcement friends.
Has their perception changed with the passing of medical cannabis in Arizona, or is it still met with resistance?
There's still resistance, but it has changed. I've seen a lot of the attitudes change. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm proud of my service in law enforcement, and mm-hmm. I'm proud of my brothers and sisters in law enforcement, but unfortunately, you know, and they care. They care about their communities, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, they were misinformed. They mm-hmm. didn't know the facts. They, you know, saw a danger that marijuana was going to come in and create a blight in these communities, cause crime mm-hmm. to go up, and they were worried.
Yeah.
But that hasn't been the case.
Yeah.
It's been legal in Arizona since 2011. So.
Yeah.
And it just hasn't been there. And it's specifically in the last community where I was a police officer in Gila County in a small town called Globe. Mm. They allowed one dispensary to come in, and it's the highest taxpayer in the town.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
They love the revenue, the tax revenue from it. It's a very respectable business. It has not caused a crime. There aren't people sitting around outside smoking joints, you know, causing problems. I mean, so the police there, and a friend of mine was the police chief at the time mm-hmm. when they brought it in, and fortunately he had an open mind, so mm-hmm. he was open to it. A lot of town councils, they look to their police chiefs for advice. They're mm-hmm. like, tell us, is this going to be a bad thing, you know? And there were a couple of council members, one in particular who's been active in marijuana activism for a long time. And they were really open-minded about it, and they brought this business in, and it's been great. It's just that nothing negative.
Yeah.
Nobody has anything bad to say about it.
Well, and I feel like that's what we're seeing. But so I don't even know the story. We've met, we've hung out, you know, we're both based in Los Angeles, and we knew that we wanted to get you on the show because you're this wealth of knowledge. But how did you evolve from, you know, security, well, from police officer to security to now being very active in the cannabis community, you know, your role with LEAP and just really trying to change the perception? Can you talk to us about that?
Well, thank you for asking. It's been a long road for me. I'm mm-hmm. 53 years old, so it started, you know, and I wouldn't have guessed that I was going to be, you know, a marijuana activist mm-hmm. Per se. But in high school, I smoked a little pot like mm-hmm. a lot of people did. Mm-hmm. I didn't see a problem with it. It just didn't seem like that big of a deal. A couple of years later, a lot of my family has been involved in public service. Mm-hmm. And I liked the idea of being a cop. It was, you know, I wanted to help people. And mm-hmm. so when I decided to become a cop, they asked me all of these questions about whether I had done drugs or smoked marijuana. And they're sort of including all of these, you know, marijuana with all of these really hard drugs. And I just didn't get it. From the very beginning, even though I was young and I was impressionable and I knew I had a lot to learn, I just didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And then I had a life-changing experience that it was just incredible. I had only been out of the academy for a few weeks, and I was still with my field training officer. Mm-hmm. And we stopped a young black man for a traffic offense. Mm-hmm. And the car smelled like marijuana. Mm-hmm. And so we found a half of a joint in his ashtray. Mm-hmm. And so my field training officer told me to arrest him. Mm. And so I said, okay, I was doing what I was told.
Yep.
So I put the cuffs on this kid, and he asks, he says, is this going to go on my record? Mm. And my FTO, I didn't know. I was new, you know. And my FTO said, yeah, he said, it's a felony. It's going to go on your record, mm-hmm. as an arrest for a felony. And depending on, you know, what the outcome is. And this boy got quiet, and mm-hmm. Tears started mm-hmm. streaming down his face. Not tears of anger, just tears of sad. I could see, and I asked him what was wrong, and he said, I have a full scholarship to an Ivy League school, and he said, and I will lose that if you arrest me for this. Mm-hmm. And I actually get a little emotional.
I'm tearing up. This is really crazy.
It really changed my life. Mm-hmm. So I realized at that point, I said, you know, and I even asked my FTO, I said, do we have to do this?
Yeah.
I said, does the punishment fit the crime? We're going to ruin this young black man's life because mm-hmm. he had half a joint in his ashtray.
Yeah.
And it just didn't make sense to me. So that was my first experience. And from then on out, I always tried to avoid, mm-hmm. you know, there were certain requirements at times, you know, but I always tried to avoid arresting people for marijuana because it just didn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. I saw other crimes, you know, that other ways that we could use our police resources mm-hmm. that I felt would have been better spent, and we were focusing on marijuana. And then we were going after, you know, Arizona's in certain areas a very arid mm-hmm. areas where mm-hmm. the, you know, mountainous, where you can grow marijuana. Mm-hmm. So we would go after these marijuana cultivations, spend a lot of time and effort and money to mm-hmm. go after these things.
Yeah.
And I never got it. And I spoke out against it to mm-hmm. a point, but you know, I didn't want to ruin my career.
It's hard.
And so it was really difficult for me. So eventually, I transitioned over into the corporate security, mm-hmm. and like you said, my last role was with Apple. I worked with corporations like Apple, and mm-hmm. you know, where the message is really important. And so I just always had to sort of bite my tongue mm-hmm. about these things. But once I left the corporate world, I felt like I could say something about it.
Yeah.
Well, then I got into security, and I saw that there was a need. A friend of mine actually suggested, he said, you know, mm-hmm. there's going to be a big need for security in the cannabis industry. And so I came into it with an open mind. I really started researching. I didn't think that there would be a problem, you know, because mm-hmm. but my experience was anecdotal. So I started doing research. I found mm-hmm. university studies and reports that were issued by city councils and by county governments, basically a saying that, you know, they had very limited complaints mm-hmm. against these businesses. The legal licensed regulated businesses, mm-hmm. you know,
there's always the illicit market that don't comply.
Exactly. 100%. And those are the areas that have most of the problems.
Yep.
So I came into it with an open mind.
Yep.
And I started seeing that it just wasn't, and I started seeing what the police leadership was saying, these police chiefs and sheriffs were saying. They were being interviewed for these articles and TV interviews, and they're saying all of these negative things.
What were they saying? I mean, because we grew up with the war on drugs. I remember when I went to college, I stopped smoking. Like, I smoked a lot in high school, and then I think it was the war on drugs and this perception. So I guess my question is, what were they saying? Like, what is the message that the police officers were conveying that it was so negative to the public?
Well, they were saying that crime was going to go up. And there's a 65-page report, white paper, that was done by the California Police Chiefs Association a couple of years ago. And they go in and they list all of this anecdotal information about all of these crimes that happened surrounding marijuana businesses. The problem is that they're illicit businesses. They're not talking about, there are very few crimes that happen around legal, licensed, regulated marijuana businesses. It just, there's just, the statistics just don't bear it out. But they have these 65 pages, and there are some town councils that refer to that, that report, and say, look, you know, here you go. This is the California Police Chiefs Association. They are opposed to it. We are not going to allow cannabis businesses in our city because of, read this report. Well, nobody wants to sit. I read it.
Yeah.
I made notes on it with a highlighter. I found, you know, very little information that really, honestly, if you were to read it, would support the belief that cannabis businesses, licensed, regulated cannabis businesses, create a problem in the communities where they're at.
Wait, I have one thing to say to that. You're speaking about California, right?
Yes.
Or other states,
well,
too?
Well, California specifically, we haven't even been regulated. We're just now finally coming up with regulations. So
at the state level.
Even in cities, I mean, look at LA City Council.
LA, I mean,
a lot. San Diego, all of these places are just now starting to regulate it. So when it comes to illicit cannabis businesses, I mean, that's most of them out
so
there.
So I understand
right?
what you're saying, and I totally agree with you. And that was why I started looking
in like Colorado,
yes,
Washington,
and there have been one study in particular, a University of Texas study that looked at quite a few states over about a 17-year period, because there have been states in the U.S. that have had medical
like Alaska.
Marijuana. Yeah, for over 10 years now. And so what they did was they went into these states, they looked at the crime rate prior to legalization of medical marijuana, and then they looked at the crime rates after. Well, one of the great things that has happened in the U.S. in the last 20 plus years is that crime rates in general have been dropping. And so they said, well, we don't want to, you know, be dishonest. We don't want to say, oh, well, look, the crime rates fell.
Oh,
so what they did was they compared them to other states that hadn't legalized marijuana. And they found that the states that had medical marijuana had, the crime rates were dropping at a quicker rate than they were in the states that did not have medical marijuana. And one of the things, and they're conducting some studies on this, they don't have any real hard facts on it yet, but one of the things that they're saying is that people substitute marijuana for alcohol. And alcohol has historically been known to have more violent effects on individuals.
Oh, yes.
Even as a young police officer, I used to say, I never got a call from someone who said, my husband smoked a joint and beat the crap out of me. Okay?
Exactly.
I just,
yes.
I never got that call. And I went to a lot of domestic violence, a lot of family fights. And I just never got that call. And I used to joke about it. But now, it honestly, it rings true. I mean, I look at these university studies, and that's what these people are saying.
Yeah.
These university people are saying is that they believe that that's probably why the crime. And the other thing, too, is you just, if someone can get marijuana legally, they're generally going to do that. If, you know, if they can go get, easily get a medical marijuana recommendation from a doctor, and they can get medical marijuana, they're going to do it. They're going to try to be legal. And what that does is it really diminishes the black market.
100%.
And the black market causes a lot of violence, because there are territorial disputes. There are, think about it, if you're running a an illegal marijuana business and somebody owes you money, are you going to take them to court?
No.
You're
going
to use violence to get your money back. It's just automatic. It goes with the territory.
I never thought about it even in that perception, when you just compare it to just like, hey, you owed me. Like, you don't have an AR. You don't have a collections person that you can go out.
You could owe me $100 and I can't take you to court.
In Los Angeles, since we haven't been regulated, a lot of times, because I've worked with dispensaries, delivery businesses, when they've got robbed, and it's like I'm not calling the cops. What are the cops going to do? Are they going to go get the money back for me?
Now, that's in California.
Yes, however...
And that's because they're unregulated.
Yeah.
There have been cops that were like, that's a crime nonetheless. Like, we want you to call us so that we can take a report because a robbery is a robbery. It's not about you own a dispensary. We're not coming here to raid your dispensary. But if you don't report it, then we can't prevent it in the first place.
Which I appreciate that. And there are a lot of good police officers out there, but it's kind of a crapshoot.
Oh, yes.
A lot of marijuana businesses don't want to make that phone call because they don't know who they're going to get.
Yeah. I agree completely. But I have seen it. I've seen it where.
Well, thank you for that. And I've seen it as well.
Yeah.
And that's honestly, that's the way it should be.
It is.
That's
I mean,
one
really
of the perversions of law enforcement that has happened that really infuriates me is that we feel like that we can impose our own personal, you know, emotions and feelings on how we do our jobs. No, you it's, have a responsibility, you know, and, you know, even if someone is committing an illicit act or a crime or whatever, and they're injured in the process of that, as long as it's not a violent act, sometimes people bring things on themselves. But if they're just committing a nonviolent act and they're victimized because of that, they're victims.
Absolutely. Yep.
They should be seen in the eye of the law, they are. The law doesn't say, oh, well, you know, if you hire a prostitute and she stabs you, you know, you're
guilty.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't get to be a victim.
You don't get to be a victim. The law doesn't say that. So as police officers, we really should try to. We have a lot of discretion in law enforcement. And in some ways it's good, some ways it's bad.
Yes. Yeah.
It's all about education and training.
It's time for us to do some sponsor business. More Cannabis Business Minds when we return.
This is Bobby Black, host of Blazin', here to talk to you about 420 Science. I've known Matt and Gary from 420 Science for over a decade. We've spent a lot of time together at the Cannabis Cups in Amsterdam, the Doobie Awards in their hometown of Austin. They were even at my wedding. And I've always admired their integrity and how they've built 420 Science from the ground up to become the most trusted online head shop. Visit 420science.com/podcast for an exclusive deal on pipes and more from genuine people who put their customers first. That's 420science.com/podcast.
The smoke is rising, and the next crop of podcasts devoted to cannabis providers and enthusiasts are ready to be harvested.
Welcome to the Cannabis Radio Network,
founded by respected rainmakers who have been producing award-winning podcasts for over a decade. Industry headlines, business updates, medical reports, marketing, and e-commerce education rolled up perfectly for your consumption. Let's grow together.
The Cannabis Radio Network. CannabisRadio.com.
Ignite the conversation on some trending topics along the Cannabis Radio social media network. Join our crew of thousands on our Cannabis Radio page on Facebook or at Canna Radio, C-A-N-N-A Radio on Twitter. Plus, look for our Facebook and Google Plus pages for all of our original programs and connect with Dr. Dina, Kyle Cushman, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Nurse Heather, Doc Rob, the hosts of Gondrepreneur, and more. Connect with the growing Cannabis Radio social crusade at Canna Radio on Twitter or search for Cannabis Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and Instagram and grow with us.
Great minds think alike because they listen to Cannabis Business Minds. Presented by live-consulting.com. Only on CannabisRadio.com.
And I think it's education, training, and really education. Because
Leap.
And this is a perfect segue to Leap and your role with Leap because you're going to educate these people. So on our last podcast, we interviewed Jackie McGowan about California bans. And she was telling us that one of the hardest things for her is that she will go into the city and, you know, it's either a city council person that's kind of upset or sometimes it's the sheriff that just can't figure it out. So for those that don't know in the audience, what's Leap? And what's your role in Leap?
Well, Leap is it's a national organization.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, but they changed it to me to have a broader role in social justice. Now it's Law Enforcement Action Partnership, and when I found out about the organization, I always wondered, there have got to be other cops out there that feel the same way that I do. They're like, what is the, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
You know? And, And sure enough, there is an organization. There's over 5,000 members.
Oh, I didn't know
throughout
that.
The country. Oh. They have the headquarters are in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. so they really try to impact drug policy. And there are speakers all over the country, and I'm one of those. And we just try to advocate for changing drug mm-hmm. policy, reducing harm in general. We're opposed to over-incarceration, mm-hmm. to mandatory sentences, and we basically, you know, we basically have just said, look, we lost the war on drugs. Let's just face it.
Yeah.
Okay? Now we need to, and we did a lot of harm while we were fighting that yeah. war, especially on people of color,
mm-hmm.
and so now we need to try to turn around and see if we can fix that somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And the big part of that is, like you said, educating police officers mm-hmm. about the realities of legalization. And it's great. A lot of things have changed. Pew Research Institute recently mm-hmm. did a nationwide study. And 7 out of 10 police officers believe that marijuana should be legal in some form.
Oh, nice.
4 out of 10 for mm-hmm. adult use and 7 out of 10 for medical use. And when you look at the lower ages, the mm-hmm. younger police officers, it even gets higher than mm-hmm. that. Unfortunately, some of us old guys that are stuck in our ways, you know, may not always be as... And unfortunately, those are the guys that are in leadership.
Yeah.
So those are the people that we run into that are police chiefs. But we're getting more and more younger people, and they're just more open-minded. And so we believe the trend is changing, and we believe that the attitudes are going to change. It's just...
100%.
So I have a question about LEAP. Do police chiefs reach out to LEAP to be like, hey, come in and talk to us? Or how do you guys interface with other police officers to educate them? Or
it's not usually so much them reaching out to us because if you go on the website, you can see right up front what our agenda is and basically what our issues are. And they're generally not in keeping with most of these police chiefs and sheriffs.
Yeah.
But what we do is we try to... There are some, though. There have been a couple of police chiefs that were actually founders of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw this themselves, and they weren't happy with it at the time. And so they tried to change their departments, you know, to their focus so that they weren't so mm-hmm. hell-bent on, you know, on going after people for petty drug offenses.
So is it an active reach out on LEAP's behalf to educate police officers?
Yes. Every opportunity. We speak to everybody. I mean, we speak to law classes. We speak to community groups.
Mm-hmm.
We speak to everybody. But if we have an opportunity to speak to a group of police officers, we do that. And, it you know, of course, sometimes they can be a little hostile because it's doesn't...
Well, really they've been trained not to, right? It's just this whole thing about changing their perception. We have to do it all the time. We can't, you know, we don't have enough advertising channels in the cannabis community to show, hey, look, these three people that are having this podcast right now are very professional. Terry is wearing a suit and a tie. I mean, that is a hard thing, I think, to transfer over sometimes to, oh, this cannabis, reefer madness, and this complete war on drugs.
Well, at the same time, there are a lot of states left in the country that it's not legal at all, medically or recreationally.
Well, I think there's more than 40 states that have legalized cannabis.
Or CBD. Only tinctures, you know. But I would think that for LEAP, those would be much more difficult states to speak to the police officers because it's still their job to arrest people for cannabis.
Yeah.
So even if they have like a life-altering
experience,
it's like, crap, now I feel guilty doing it, you know?
Well, so two questions on that. How do we change that? Like, I mean, that's LEAP's goal as to how do we change this? How can we change the public's perception to understand that cannabis is safe? Because, so the I guess second part of that question is children. Usually the argument is my children are not going to be safe. Like, that's what Jackie was saying. Like, for her, it's the biggest battle when she talks to the sheriff. It's going to get in the hands of the children. That was a two-part question, but so what do you think, how do we go about this? Like, how can we, as the cannabis community, assist LEAP, assist in changing the public perception so that we can end this war on drugs?
I think the most important thing that we can do is have a compliant industry that ensures that we are complying with, you know, rules and regulations and laws, and that, because that's the way that we're going to dispel all of the myths.
Yeah.
Like you were talking about, Kristen, the myths, you know, about the industry that aren't true.
Yeah.
And so, because it gives them fuel. The more bad things that happen, it gives them fuel. If somebody gets injured or killed in a dispensary robbery, or a child gets a hold of some edibles or something and ends up in the hospital, and that ends up on the news. So it's important that we try to, you know, to stay compliant, and that we do things in the proper way, and then we don't give them ammunition. The other thing is, we just need to stay active. We need to go to these government meetings and let people, you know, let government officials know that we're respectable people, and that we believe it should be legal, and we, you know, we agree that it should be licensed and regulated, but that it should be legal. And law enforcement officers respond to their politicians, the city councils, the boards of supervisors, the state legislators. They're the ones that give the money to these law enforcement agencies. So we can put pressure on these politicians and let them know how we feel. I've been talking to a lot of politicians in the last couple of months, and it's amazing to me how misinformed they are, and how a lot of them don't have this information. It's been a huge privilege for me to be able to sit down with a couple of state legislators and members of city councils and just educate them on these issues. And at times they're like, wow, I didn't know that. You know, I tell them about these university studies, and they're just, and so, you know, and they've got a lot on their plate. They have a lot of issues that they have to deal with, homelessness and all of these other issues that at times probably take priority over the cannabis industry. So we just need to try to educate them and hold them accountable and get together. I mean, the way that we've done on the city of Los Angeles, ordinances, you know, recently that we voted on, low voter turnout. I'm sure that there are more people in the industry or that support than actually showed up to vote. So it's just really important to vote and to let the politicians know.
I think it's interesting that, because with the police, like the LA County Sheriff's Department are talking about we want $25 million to shut down everyone in the unincorporated areas until we've regulated them. And I think a really good point for the politicians to be like, we need regulations so that you have something to hold people against besides just the laws. Give them an opportunity to act, you know, as responsible cannabis businesses instead of everything being a crime.
Yeah, I mean, because
so they're in control, but the police seem to have a really large voice when it comes to affecting the city council.
Yeah. Well, and for me, I mean, like, so one of the things that you see working in a regulated market is, so, I mean, like, I climbed, like, Oregon, Washington, is that sometimes regulators don't understand business operators in the sense of, like, hey, and I feel like this is the crux of the problem in Los Angeles with the $25 million funds to put these guys out of business until they're regulated. It's like, well, hold on. You could, these people actively want to be compliant and regulated, and don't put them out of business. Let's like use that $25 million elsewhere.
They've been trying for years.
They've been trying for years. So it's interesting. Yeah. And so I guess the solution, because I always like to think, okay, this problem sucks. What can we do? Is to continue to go to city council and talk.
Well, regulations.
It worked with Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Because now Los Angeles has basically said that we are only going to use stormtroopers, law enforcement, as a last resort to go in and shut these businesses down.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to fine them, and we're going to shut off their water and power. And we're only going to do that after we've given them plenty of opportunity to become licensed.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that's the
unfortunately,
way to do it.
You know, Jim McDonald, the LA County Sheriff, is a powerful voice. He's widely respected, very opposed to, you know, the cannabis industry. And
let's get him on the show.
I just wonder why. Why is he opposed to it? Wouldn't it make your job easier if you didn't have to deal with that whole aspect?
Yeah.
Well, it's honestly, I think it's pretty intuitive.
Yeah, right?
I mean, I look at it and I evaluate the evidence and it seems pretty obvious to me. So yeah. I have trouble at times understanding why these police leaders are so opposed to it. The only thing I can think is I can just tell you that, unfortunately, law enforcement officers historically have been very resistant to change. Mm-hmm. We get stuck in our ways. We don't like change. We like to do things the same way.
And that's every organization. Yeah, that's true.
And so, you know, we just, I think that some of these older guys, like I said, that are in police leadership, their whole lives, they were, you know, told how bad marijuana was, and they did see it an illegal element to it. They saw a lot of people that were involved in other types of crimes that were also involved in marijuana, and so they just have this ill-conceived perception that that is just absolutely not correct, and they've just stuck to it. And I think that, like the politicians, they have a lot on their plate as well, so they're just misinformed. They don't have all the facts. Like I said, you know, when I sit down to some of these police chiefs and I talk to them and I tell them, show them these university studies and I show them the facts, they're like, wow, I didn't know that. You know, I might not get them to flip immediately.
But you've switched something at least.
I get them to start thinking and I say, look, please read these things and you will understand that you have been lied to. Honestly, you've been lied to for decades like I was lied to. And we need to take a new...
We
need to look at this with a fresh perspective.
100%. And that's what you're doing. So, I mean, like, I want to segue into security in the cannabis industry. And one of the things that we mentioned was, you know, the fact that the public, it's a lot of people are against cannabis, like this, the law enforcement, because of the public, this public safety aspect. And I've noticed working with clients with the banking issues, there's a lot of cash that these guys have on hand, the ones that have licenses that are trying to get it to the bank. And that's a huge public safety risk, right? And I think I'd love for you to spend maybe a few minutes talking to us about what should these guys be thinking about in terms of making their business safe. Not because they have to be compliant, because we already know they have to, and they have to adhere to the compliance standards set forth by the regulatory body. Have this amount of security cameras, you know, have these procedures. But I think a lot of times people don't know why is that so important. Can you talk to us about that?
Well, you're absolutely right. I help businesses, cannabis businesses, prepare their business plans. At least the security portion of that business plan that they submit to the regulatory agencies that are deciding to license or not to license. And so I have to understand all of these, the regulations, what the requirements, the licensing requirements, and what they are requiring. Sometimes your security plan can be as much as 30 or 40% of your overall points that you get percentage-wise of your overall points when you apply for a license with some, you know, regulatory body. And so it's a huge part of that. So I'm really happy to help businesses do that. But when I study all of these requirements, very often what I see is that they're just the bare minimums.
Probably because they don't I mean, you would have to come from a security background to know. You don't know what you don't know, right? Which is what you're here for.
Well, that's why I've been trying to talk to these politicians, these legislators, local and state legislators, trying to let them know. We don't want to put undue burdens on the businesses. And each business is different. Each business has a different risk profile. Some businesses are in neighborhoods that are difficult, that with high crime, and others are in, you know, neighborhoods that aren't high crime. So we have to look at that individually, and I just want the cannabis businesses to understand that they have a responsibility. And, you know, historically, cannabis businesses having been unregulated, they may not have always operated with any sort of governance. You know, you and I, Simone, have talked about corporate governance. But one of the things that happens in business, especially once we become mainstream, we have to comply with these best practices that the corporate world is using. And one of those concepts, having been in corporate security myself, there's a legal concept called duty of care. And I believe, first and foremost, it's a moral duty of care that we have to our employees mm-hmm. and to our customers to keep them safe. But it's a legal duty. And as a business, if you don't keep your employees safe and they are injured or killed mm-hmm. during the course of doing your business for you, carrying your cash, carrying your product, working your dispensary, you could be held criminal or civilly liable for mm-hmm. that. It happens all over the U.S. It happens all over the world.
Yeah.
Corporations almost daily have to pay out huge settlements to their employees or the employee's family if the person was killed because they didn't protect them.
No, absolutely. So when I used to travel internationally, I would go to high-risk countries and we would get a security profile. We had to have armed services escort us places. And this was because there was all that corruption. And it makes sense, legally, if something happened, if we got kidnapped, if we got harmed, the corporation that I would work for would be liable. No, nobody's talking about this in this industry at all.
And in that example, I'm thinking of the lab, or there was a BHO processor in Oregon mm-hmm. who didn't have the ventilation right or something, and they had an explosion. And
it applies to safety security, but it's
exactly that's why there are those posters in every business. Yeah. It's how many days without an accident.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
So, and with a cash intensive dispensary, you need to protect your employees because you're a higher risk of getting robbed, right? Yeah. Or in a cultivation. Yeah, each one has its own security threats to address.
Absolutely. So the other thing that has been of major concern to, of course, the cannabis businesses want to keep their cash and their product safe. And there are certain measures that they can take to do that. And we're more than happy to help them do that.
Yep.
Several marijuana business owners have asked me about insider theft, and in the industry we call it insider theft or the insider threat.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
They're worried. They're saying, "I know that there is, pilferage in my business. I know that, for certain people, what do I do?" And you can implement all the security measures that you want, and mm-hmm. you can minimize those things, but I believe that it's more important to approach it from a proactive perspective.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
We, at Armaplex, we have a program that we're developing that involves employee engagement, training and mm-hmm. engagement. And one of the things that we understand in the security industry is that if you treat your employees badly, people mm-hmm. want to be loyal.
Yes,
okay, they want to be loyal.
Yes.
But if you treat them badly, they're going to be disloyal and they're going to steal from you. And we've done these studies where we talked to employees who were in trouble for stealing from their company.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most common things that they say is they treated me badly. They didn't pay me enough they cheated me out of this or that or whatever, or my boss is a real jerk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt justified. Now, there's a certain number of those that are just misguided and they're going to feel that way no matter what. But we find that a large percentage of those types of incidents could be prevented if companies were more proactive about
healthy culture,
treating people with dignity and respect.
Yeah,
it's just all about
the tone at the top. I mean, so this, it's just so funny. That's why it's we have to get you on the show. Our work goes hand in hand. All we think about is the corporate governance framework. How do processes work? How are employees treated? Because all of that in a business cycle is interrelated. And I think I want to segue a little bit into leadership. A lot of it goes with how you treat your people, how you motivate them, because with shrinkage and with that type of theft, it's the opportunity. It's also it's the fraud triangle, right? And it happens in, the manipulation of financial statements. But then when we think about cannabis, it's, hey, you've got a ton of cash. You've got a ton of cannabis. And so do you have A, the inventory controls, but even B, if you don't, and if you've pissed off an employee or if you haven't instilled that tone at the top and really treated them loyal through a mission statement, through a development plan, through all these things and training, the risk is there.
it's time for us to do some sponsor business. More Cannabis Business Minds when we return.
Oh, let the marijuana llama tell you something now. Bought a game for your phone, gonna make you say, wow! The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seeds, sell the bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little, your empire grows large. Put different celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong. Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Hemping, that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot-proofed by the man who run High Times. Oh yeah, get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me own crops, you know. Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
Are you disturbed by the prescription medication commercials on television and their endless list of side effects? They go on, and you end up having to take multiple pills to counteract the problems caused by the first pill. It never ends. Have you looked into CBD as a more natural option? At Saturn Ranch, we produce all-natural CBD topicals and THC-infused edibles. Premium lab-tested hemp-derived CBD is the most important ingredient in our products. From topical balms, salt scrubs, bath-soaking salts to tinctures and edibles, you're sure to find something to help. Family-owned and operated, we at Saturn Ranch believe in and use our products daily. Don't put anything on your body that you wouldn't put in your body. SaturnRanch.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Voober vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Voober vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be. The Voober way.
Great minds think alike because they listen to Cannabis Business Minds. Presented by live-consulting.com, only on cannabisradio.com.
The buzz phrase that I've seen used lately, that I know a couple of people that are experts in this area, mm-hmm. and I've actually been talking to them about helping us with this program that we would like to roll out and offer to cannabis businesses, is employee engagement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And an engaged employee is not going to steal from you.
Yes. Yeah.
Period. I mean, if... It seems like an oversimplification, and it might be in some ways, but honestly, it really isn't that hard to treat your people with dignity and respect.
No.
It seems hard because a lot of businesses, we've all worked for really crappy bosses.
Yep.
We don't have that many awesome bosses that we can look to and say, wow, that person was amazing. You know, even though they were strict with me, they still treated me with dignity and respect. It's just, you know, so
businesses
you're right about leadership.
Are people.
Exactly.
You don't have a business without your people.
Really,
it's
very
common sense.
It's totally common sense, but I think it's just, and so this is what, we don't have enough time. We have to get you on the show to talk about leadership because I want to have a whole segment on this. But, you know, so maybe somebody's listening and they're like, okay, wait, I'm a business owner. Somebody's stealing from me. Oh, I better probably talk to Terry. So we'll put all of your info on our show notes. But what's like one thing when we talk about leadership in the sense of it's hard to understand how to be a good leader? You know, and it's, to me, it's all about how you really have to understand like this new lens of thinking. Talk to us a little bit about leadership.
Well, for me, it's about introspectivity. And we had talked briefly about the fact that I'm writing a book on leadership in my spare time. And it's, the name of the book is called Introspective Leadership. You think you're an 8, but you're probably a 4.
Oh, whoa.
And
harsh words.
Well, it's the truth. When I taught leadership, I found that I would do surveys at the beginning of the class, and I would say, what type of leader are you? Rate yourself what type of leader you are with your people, 1 through 10. Mm-hmm. The average was always 8. Then I would ask them, okay, rate your boss. The average was always 4, around 4. It's like, then I would show them those, and I would say, okay, you honestly are going to tell me that your boss is a 4 and you're an 8? Wait, trust me, that I've taught this class, so it's all about introspectivity. It really is about leaders constantly asking themselves if they're doing the right thing, if they're being responsible, and in the cannabis industry, because we're such a highly regulated industry, the boss can't be compliant by themselves. They have to get their employees engaged in being compliant. And that all comes through leadership. And you can't just force them to do that. You can't just yell at them. you have to make sure that they understand that that's important to you. It's important to the business. Mm-hmm. It's important to your investors, to your partners,
yeah.
whoever is involved in the business. You have a responsibility
yeah.
to do things in a compliant way, and the employees have to be engaged in
that. Everyone has to understand their part. Once you see your part in a company, it's easy to understand to be engaged with what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the other part of that, I believe, is holding people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, sometimes we either go one extreme or the other. We're either too nice yeah. or we're too harsh. You can be a good boss and you can treat people with dignity and respect, but people actually like to be held accountable. People mm-hmm. like structure. They like to be able to operate within a framework where I know exactly what my job responsibilities are.
Yes.
I know exactly what I can and can't do. And most people operate. There is a small percentage, 10 to 15% of employees will always act outside of those boundaries just because that's their nature or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's 10 or 15% of people that will always comply with that. And then there's the percentage in between. Those are the people that we have to work to keep engaged all the time. And that can only be done through really effective leadership.
Wow.
Communication.
Very
important as well, right?
No, we have to get you on the show
yeah.
next, like another, I don't know if it's in the next few weeks to
I
talk about
that.
Leadership.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Are you ready for the speed round?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's do
All
this.
All right.
Okay. As a business leader, how do you make decisions and stay ahead of the market?
Well, for me, it's really important that I make decisions that reflect the interests of my investors and my partners in the business, and that I protect the business. But it's also really important to me to be socially responsible when I make those decisions. And I think that one of the things I love about cannabis industry is that you have so many amazing people mm-hmm. that care about being socially responsible, about doing, helping people out. And So the people that I've met mm-hmm. love that idea of doing things in a right way that helps the community, and we need to make sure that we're giving equal access and that sort of thing. So I think it's important as businesses that we do that. Always keep that in mind. But me personally, one of the things that I do as far as to stay ahead of the market is. The last few months, I've been going to, 6 or 8 meetings per week, government meetings,
industry
networking
That's
events.
A lot of work.
It has really kept me busy. That's why, I don't have a lot of spare time, but I've been going to these meetings, and it's all about just understanding what the latest regulations are, what these cities, counties, and the state are doing. And just trying to keep abreast of those things, because that's really the way that we're going to be able to make decisions in this industry.
It's the information. Yep. It's the information source.
Yep.
If someone's just getting into the industry, what is something that you think they should know?
Well, I think everybody should understand, first and foremost, that you're going to have to be compliant. The industry, especially like you were saying before, in California has gotten away with it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it was a hands-off approach. And that's when I started getting in the industry here and really researching it and seeing it and talking to these governmental agencies. I realized they had basically said, they weren't openly saying this. They were just kind of like quietly just stepping back and saying, okay, eventually we're going to have a licensing and regulation structure. And once we do that, we're going to require you to be compliant, and you're going to have to do it. But for now, it's just kind of like, take the hands off and, take a step back, and we're just going to let you do your thing. And that's what's been happening. But I can tell you, I know what they're thinking. I know what they're planning. They are implementing this structure. They're going to require people to be licensed, and the businesses that aren't licensed are going to be put out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them may be even arrested. So even though that's not the best solution in my mind, I can tell you that that's where they're headed. So I just know right up front that you need to be compliant, and that you just need to plan for that. You need to make sure that you're always compliant. The other thing that one of the things that I've noticed is you know, it's it, like we talked about, we really need to have corporate governance. We need to be sure that we are following best practices and that we're following law, not only laws, but also within, you know, the best practices according to business, the way that we do business in the U.S. I've heard a lot of small cannabis business owners say that they're concerned about these big corporations coming in and taking over the industry. I can tell you that the best way for us to either slow that down, I don't think we're going to stop it, but the best way for us to slow that down and keep the opportunity in the hands of the small operators is if we learn how to do things their way.
Yep.
Okay? If we try to do things in a non-compliant way that isn't in keeping with best practices and the corporate world comes in and they show that they can do it better than we can do it, they're going to win. Okay? So we have to learn their way of doing things, how to be compliant and how to have that governance. And once we do that, then we can fight them at their own game. And so that's really important. So I would say anybody coming into the industry, those are really important things to keep in mind. And I have a lot of other things, but I know that we're kind of short on time, so.
Yes, well, I mean, you're correct in all of those. Compliance is definitely key. Where do you see yourself a year from now?
Well, we at Armaplex, we hope to be actively protecting cannabis businesses, keeping their assets safe and their people safe. We hope to have increased the number of businesses that we are working with. That's one of the reasons I'm getting out and talking to everybody, because I believe that we have a good service and a good product and the right attitude. And it's really important that you know, that we let people know about that so that we can help them out. And in a year, a little over a year, I'd like to, for us to be seen as the leaders in the cannabis security industry in California, and with our sights set on being the same for the industry nationwide, the national security cannabis industry. It's important. We plan on expanding and doing this on a greater scale.
Lead by example.
Absolutely.
Wait, and your book. Will your book be done?
I'm hoping. That's what I'm working towards.
I want to read it.
I know. I want to read it, honestly. Yeah. I mean, you are such an incredible wealth of knowledge. I believe that you're going to achieve that easily within the next year. I want to see how we can help you. For all those that are listening, we're talking to Terry Blevins, who is the CEO of Armaplex, a security firm that's based in Los Angeles. We'll put all the notes on our website. But thank you so much for sharing your knowledge.
Thank you, Kristen.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Cannabis Business Minds. You can download episodes of our program by going to cannabisradio.com or subscribing to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and very soon on iHeartRadio.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without proper consent of CannabisRadio.com is prohibited.